Bonjour et bienvenue dans Avez-vous choisi, le podcast du vendredi qui vous invite à tout choisir dans votre vie avec curiosité, lucidité, responsabilité et authenticité. Je suis Oriane Savouré-Lucas, sérielle choisisseuse de ma vie. Je suis aussi coach et j'accompagne les personnes ambitieuses et engagées qui réussissent dans la vie et qui ont surtout à cœur de réussir leur vie. Je les accompagne à se créer une vie sur mesure qui leur va comme un gant, une vie épanouissante et impactante en profondeur. Dans la vie, j'ai les pieds sur terre, la tête dans les étoiles, et avec le podcast Avez-vous choisi, je vous propose d'explorer avec curiosité le vaste et intrigant territoire du choix. Cette exploration, je vous y invite au fil des épisodes et à travers trois formats distincts. Le billet, dans lequel je partage des questionnements, réflexions et ressources qui m'aident à choisir ma vie. L'éclairage, où j'échange avec une auditrice ou un auditeur qui se sent bloqué sur le rond-point du choix et qui souhaite bénéficier de mon éclairage pour débroussailler et clarifier sa situation. Et enfin, la conversation. Je vous propose dans la conversation de faire la connaissance d'une personne dont je trouve la trajectoire de vie inspirante et je partage avec vous cet échange que j'ai eu avec cette belle personne et son précieux supplément d'âme. Une manière de poursuivre votre exploration du territoire de vos choix à travers la découverte d'un parcours singulier. Et aujourd'hui, je vous propose de découvrir ma conversation avec Tal Benchar. Alors en prononçant ce nom, j'ai toujours du mal à en croire mes oreilles et je crois que j'ai encore besoin de me pincer un peu pour le croire. Oui, j'ai bien eu une conversation d'une heure avec ce célèbre auteur de best-sellers mondiaux, conférencier, ancien professeur à l'université d'Harvard, où il a enseigné des cours à la résonance et aux succès internationaux sur la psychologie positive et la psychologie du leadership. Aujourd'hui, Tal Benchar est consultant et donne des conférences dans le monde entier auprès de dirigeants d'entreprises multinationales, auprès du grand public et des populations à risque. Les sujets de prédilection de Tal Benchar sont le leadership, le bonheur, l'éducation, l'innovation, l'éthique, l'estime de soi, la résilience, la définition d'objectifs et la pleine conscience. Tal Benchar a également la particularité d'être un féru de sport. Il a été d'ailleurs champion de squash dans sa jeunesse en Israël. Il nage, il danse, il pratique le yoga. Et la mise en mouvement du corps dans le choix du bonheur est une dimension importante de son travail. J'ai découvert le travail de Tal Benchar il y a bientôt 10 ans grâce entre autres à Florence Servan-Schreiber, professeure de bonheur et notre ambassadrice française de la psychologie positive, qui a été elle-même une élève de Tal Benchar. Et d'ailleurs, je vous invite à écouter la conversation que j'ai déjà eue avec Florence Servan-Schreiber dans l'épisode 25 du podcast. Le travail de Tal Benchar a été et reste très important pour moi, à la fois dans mon parcours personnel, mais aussi dans mon parcours professionnel et jusqu'à la création même de ce podcast et l'importance de ce thème du choix dans ma vie. Et c'est vraiment une grande joie et une grande fierté d'avoir pu converser avec Tal et de vous livrer aujourd'hui cette conversation sur le choix, sur le bonheur et sur la vie en général. Au cours de notre conversation, Tal Benchar et moi avons parlé entre autres de son appétit à traduire en langage simple, clair et applicable des idées scientifiques complexes. Nous avons parlé de la place centrale du choix dans tous ses travaux et dans sa vie, de notre pouvoir de choisir notre vie à chaque instant, choix important à faire pour augmenter notre niveau de bonheur de manière efficace et durable, ou encore de gratitude, de cœur sage et de la façon de faire des choix alignés. Alors, attention, cette conversation est en anglais, dans cet épisode audio. Pas de panique, si la langue de Shakespeare n'est pas votre tasse de thé, et si vous aimeriez bénéficier de la traduction en français de cet échange, je vous invite à visionner mon échange avec Tal Benchar en vidéo, sous-titré en français, sur la chaîne YouTube d'Avez-vous choisi, et vous retrouverez le lien dans les notes de l'épisode. Voilà, sans plus attendre, c'est avec une grande joie que je vous laisse découvrir cette conversation en anglais avec Tal Benchar.
Tal Benchar, thank you for accepting my invitation in my podcast Avez-vous choisi, which literally means Have you chosen? In this podcast, I tackle the topic of choice in many ways and many angles. And I share conversations with people I find very inspiring in the way they've created and they've chosen the life the live. So Tal, welcome to Avez-vous choisi, the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Arani. It's very good to be here.
Thank you, Tal. So Tal, you're an author, you're a lecturer, a consultant, and a former professor at Harvard University. You taught two of the largest classes in Harvard University's history, positive psychology and the psychology of leadership. And your books are bestsellers all around the world. So I'm honored and thrilled and grateful to share this conversation about choice with you today, because your work has really been very meaningful for me, in, even in the creation of the podcast. So thank you. And I'd like to share that I found very inspiring the way you translate scientific, very rigorous research from the social sciences into what you call accessible and actionable ideas, so that individuals, communities, and organizations can choose to put them into practice in order for them to flourish. Is it a good summary of your intention?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I started off as an academic, and quite early on in my career, I realized that while I enjoyed reading about research and teaching about research, I personally do not connect to doing the research. And I decided that I will be a sort of a channel of taking rigorous evidence-based ideas from academia, where, you know, scientists toil day in and day out and make them accessible, because they're not accessible in academic journals. You know, very few people read academic journals. So, you know, I read them, I enjoy them, and I also enjoy making them accessible and teaching the ideas from there.
Mm-hmm. And I discovered your work a few years ago thanks to Florence Servan-Schreiber, who is our French ambassador of positive psychology. And I know she took your course on positive psychology a few years ago. I think this is something you have in common with Florence Servan-Schreiber, making sure to translate rigorous information and research on social sciences into accessible data for helping people to put them into practice on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, you know, Florence and I have been working together, talking about this specific idea for a long time, because, you know, there is so much great work being done day in and day out in laboratories, in the ivory tower. It would be a pity for this work not to to reach the masses. So Florence, myself, and there are a few others who are translating, in a way, these ideas, making them accessible. You know, it's Winston Churchill once said about Britain and the United States that there are two countries separated by a common language. And in many ways, when you read academic journal articles, you know, this is what comes to mind. Yes, it's in English or in French, and yet English speaking or French speaking people can't understand it. It's almost a different language,
and even a different culture sometimes.
Very much so. Very much so. So the question is, how do you take these ideas and make them applied so that people can use them day in and day out?
Mm-hmm. And I know that in your early 20s, you worked in Singapore on an offshore platform, and you had this opportunity to work and share with people from many different cultures and languages. How much would you say this experience was a kind of turning point in the way you've chosen to lead your life, even in this way, to translate information from scientific culture into a common language, everyday speaking language?
Yeah, you know, this experience was very, very formative, personally as well as professionally. So, you know, I was working for a large shipping company, And my role was essentially to help bring ideas from the ships to headquarters and from headquarters to the ship. So again, to translate, if you wish. And there it was even more complicated because on one ship, so, you know, this is a cargo ship, you have on average 30 individuals. Those 30 individuals could be from 10 different nationalities. So whether it was from England or the US or the Philippines and China and Turkey and Singapore. And when you have so many nationalities and different people with different levels of education, you know, some people who are, you know, engineers and others who have been working on ships since they were 16. And when you have to translate ideas and bring these people together, you know, it's not easy. And it certainly taught me a great deal. And I must say, I learned so much on those ships, whether it was from the engineers or from the, you know, from the person responsible for cleaning the oil in the business, in the engine. I learned a great deal about, I think, human nature. I learned a great deal also about the cultural differences, whether it's between people from the Philippines and people from Croatia, as well as, I think, even more importantly, about the commonalities. Mm-hmm. The commonalities, the sameness and the universal nature and the similarities in terms of what we seek and what makes us happy, what brings us meaning, what turns us on. So it's all these things that I learned that still today, you know, 30 years later, day in and day out, I express them in my writing and my teaching.
Mm-hmm. And today, the topics you lecture on include many topics like leadership, happiness, education, innovation, self-esteem, goal setting, mindfulness. And it sounds like there is a common thread, which is choice around these topics. So how important would you say the theme of choice is in your work?
Yeah, you know, if you'd asked me this question 20 years ago, when I started off, or 30 years ago, I would say, yeah, choice is very important. But over the years, I've realized that choice is not just important, it's central to everything that I do and so many of my colleagues do. So I'll maybe share with you my first experience or my first realization of just how central choice was. So this was, I had just come back from a long trip. I conducted a workshop. It was a trip abroad, you know, long flight, long workshop. I was absolutely exhausted. And I was, you know, really ready to rest. The problem was that the following day, I was about to start another workshop. Another three-day workshop. And I remember lying in bed and thinking to myself, you know, I wish I wouldn't have to stand in front of an audience now for three whole days. And, you know, what I need is 3 days in bed, not 3 days on stage. And then I remember this explicitly. I mean, this was years ago. I remember thinking, okay, well, you know, I don't have a choice. I committed to it. I'll just do it. You know, I've done it before. I'll do it again. And as I was just before falling asleep, I remember thinking about, wait a minute, it's not true that I don't have a choice. I do have a choice. So first of all, my choice is not to, you know, not to give the lecture, but of course that's not really a choice, but I do have a choice of if I do go for the lecture, what I bring to the lecture. And in fact, I realized that at every moment in my life, I have a choice. So for example, with a lecture, yes, I could go on with the mindset and say, okay, I have no choice about this. You know, I committed before, I'll just get through the 3 days. Or I could go on stage and say, what a privilege it is for me to be sharing what I care about so much with others. Yes, I'm exhausted from the flight. Yes, I'm exhausted from teaching. And yet I have a choice to bring a positive mindset, a mindset of privilege I'm so privileged to be sharing what I care about so much with others. And as soon as I did that and realized that I have a choice, my entire energy changed. And I ended up sharing again. Wasn't easy to stand for those 3 days. And yet it was so different from what it would have been had I gone on with a defeatist mindset, a no choice mindset. So I chose to stand in front of that audience that day and share with them. And that, of course, extended to so many other areas. At every moment, I realized that I have a choice. You know, right now, I have a choice. Do I, you know, sit down like this or do I sit down like this? And of course, that affects how I feel and the energy that I communicate. I also have a choice about whether I'm grateful for what I have or take things for granted, which is why every night before going to bed or every moment, potentially, I can choose to express gratitude. And again, this is Florence's idea, you know, of three blessings. I also have bigger choices in my life, which, you know, what career path do I choose? I have a choice about what partner I choose to spend time with. So there are choices at every moment, small choices, as well as very large choices. And the way I see these choices are each choice is like a brick. And these bricks add up, even the small choices, these bricks add up and they basically form the path of my life. So what path do I choose to take is the question that I can ask literally at every moment in my life. And when we ask this question, then we open ourselves up to much more happiness, much more success, and much more confidence in our ability to chart our own lives.
Yeah, and what I think is very interesting is this point of mindfulness and the fact that it all starts with bringing more mindfulness into our day-to-day yes. actions. And I really feel that many people put a lot of energy and even stress for big decisions in life and key turning points, associating choices to big moments of life, and that they don't exactly understand the power of all these compounded effects of small yeah. choices of life and the way we could choose to put a lot of energy and focus on these little steps to make sure that we build day to day our path to happiness.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. It's exactly right. You know, so many of the choices that we have in life are what I've come to call rhetorical choices. You know, just like you have a rhetorical question, which is, you know, you ask a child, you know, do you want me to be upset with you? I mean, no, I don't. These are rhetorical questions. At the same time, they're also rhetorical choices. You know, if you have a choice to be grateful for what you have in life or to take things for granted, well, obvious, easy. You know, you don't want to be to take for granted. You want to be a grateful person. Or another choice, do you want to bring positive energy to a conversation or do you want to be, you know, to bring negative energy? Of course, I want to bring positive energy. So there are so many choices in life that are rhetorical, that are obvious, but and yet we don't always make the right, so to speak, choice. Why? Because we're not mindful. We forget to be grateful. In other words, we're mindless about all the amazing things that we have in our life. And we forget that we have a choice, that we can actually bring positive energy to a conversation, whether it's with our boss, our employee, or our loved ones at home. So the more mindful we become of these choices, the more we raise them to the levels of awareness, because this is what mindful is all about. It's awareness. The better choices we make.
So how do you say...
In other words, we become active choosers, active agents, rather than passive recipients of a status quo.
And how do you recommend we move from theory to practice to mastery when it comes to choosing on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. So I'll share with you another story. This one I learned from a wonderful book called Appreciative Coaching. One of the authors there, Sarah Oram. So they tell a story of Ori. Ori was, working in a regular business, and then he decided to open his own business, his own yoga studio. And what he found very quickly was that he was constantly distracted, because when you're running a business, it's different than being an employee for many people. So he was distracted and he was not present, and he wanted to be more present. So what he did was he had a hand watch, and on his watch he wrote the letter N. The letter N.
Okay.
And every time he looked at the watch, he said, "Oh, N, standing for now."
Hmm.
So he'd remind, "What is the time?" "Oh, the time is now." And it reminded him to be present. And I really like that. And I've taken and built on that idea. And now regularly I would wear a bracelet. So every few months I would wear a bracelet for a month to remind me of something that I want to be aware of, that I want to be mindful of. So for example, it could be, if I'm feeling very distracted, then to remind me to be present, to be in the here and now. At other times, recently I wore it because I was stressed and I was taking out my stress on my kids. And I thought, this is not the kind of father I want to be. This is not the kind of father they deserve. So I wore a bracelet for a month, and a month because of, the 30 days that usually takes to create a ritual. And I wore it, and the bracelet was a reminder to be soft and gentle with my children. And, I really didn't even need it for a month. After a few days, I was already in the, back to the way I wanted to father. So having reminders are way, whether it could be a bracelet, it could be, on our, phone to have a screensaver. My daughter made me the screensaver.
Oh, the yoga.
Exactly.
The tree poster. The tree.
So every time, I open my phone, I'm reminded, yoga, presence, grounded, mm-hmm. like a tree. So you can have reminders, on the walls, whether it's pictures of people who remind you of something, let's say you want kindness. So you have a picture of Mother Teresa, or for me, it's a picture of a teacher who's my role model, Marva Collins, mm-hmm. that I have next to me. And she reminds me of my calling, of my passion, and why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So reminders are key. That's one. Mm-hmm. General meditation also helps, because meditation by its very nature teaches us to be more mindful of the breath going in and out, if that's what I'm meditating on, but also mindful in general of life. And that contributes to us making healthier, better choices.
Okay. And you mentioned the idea of clarifying the intention we have and focusing our energy on what we want, on what we choose to do on a day-to-day basis, and then having reminders to make sure we stick to our decision and our choice to be present, for instance, or to put into practice whatever choice we've made for ourselves. So I have a sense of choosing as a kind of practice, or choice as a muscle to build stronger and stronger. And I know you're a father of three, and I'm very interested in understanding how you've chosen to your posture as a parent, and what are the key messages and key lessons you've decided to share with your children when it comes to choice.
Yeah, I think the most important thing as a parent is to lead by example. So, when my kids see me choose a path that I'm passionate about, when I come home and tell them about a class I just taught, or a student who inspired me, or a book I read, I think these are the most important lessons I can give them, because they see my passion And I believe they are more likely to choose their passion. Second, we also, as a family, this is a practice, because as you mentioned, it is a practice. A practice we started as a family, we bring a yoga teacher home. And the five of us do yoga together. And they're also encouraged to bring friends. So they bring, you know, friends and they do yoga with us. And this I hope will be a practice that they'll continue their entire lives, you know, after they leave home and as well. In addition, questions are very important for raising mindfulness, for raising awareness. So both my wife and I, we do this a lot. We ask them questions, and the question is, you know, simple questions such as how was school? And we don't stop when they say fine. We do have two teenagers at home. and we ask them specific, you know, so how was this teacher and who, you know, what did you talk about in class? So, you know, asking questions, I think that is a very important exercise, for parents. The other thing, and again, this is not particularly with choice, but it's very important in terms of parenting. We also share with them when things are not going well. You know, when I struggle at work, or, you know, I've just recently picked up ping pong, table tennis, as a sport, and, you know, I'm really struggling now to learn how to play. So I share this with my children, or where things don't go well at work, I share it with my children so that they so that they're not afraid of making choices. Because when you make choices, when you take responsibility, it also means that you take responsibility and you make mistakes. If you don't take responsibility, you can always blame, you know, the situation, other people. But when you make a choice, you know, you will make more mistakes as well. And it's important to communicate that it's okay. It's important to share with them that it's okay failing, that it's okay struggling.
And doubting.
Sorry?
And doubting as well.
And doubting and hurting. These are all fine and an inevitable part of life.
Yeah. And can you please explain how important our choices are when it comes to our happiness regarding positive psychology research?
Yeah. So first of all, so choices are important on many levels. The first level is that choices make a difference. Just having a choice makes a difference. So if I know that I have a choice, if I know that I have control over the path that I take, you know, this way or this way, if I know that I have a choice about, you know, what I do with my time, that in and of itself contributes to happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, psychologists talk about locus of control. Do I have control over my life as a pillar of both self-esteem as well as of happiness? Because, of course, the two are connected. So just having a choice is important for happiness. And then also the kind of choices that we do make. Are the choices that come from within? Or are they choices that are that are chosen because of what other people think? You know, there's a wonderful story that has really influenced me and continues. I mean, even this morning I was writing. This morning I was thinking about it. A story by one of my mentors, Warren Bennis. So Warren Bennis is considered, I mean, he passed away a few years ago, but considered maybe to be the greatest thinker in the area of leadership in the 20th and the beginning of the 21st century. And Warren Bennis was taught at Harvard and MIT and basically created an academic field for leadership. And one of his, so when he got to about, he was about 50, and he said, look, I've written about leadership. I've researched leadership. I want to practice it now. And he said, instead of just staying in academia or traditional academia as a researcher and teacher, he said, I want to lead. And what he did was he took over a university and became the president of a university, and started to practice what he preached as the leader. And he did wonderful work there and brought the university where he worked to a higher level and brought more donations and better scholars and better scholarship. He really did practice what he preached in terms of leadership, and he did that for 7 years. And after 7 years, being a university president, leading in practice, he gave a talk at Harvard, and one of his friends and ex-colleagues, Ted Sizer, I believe it was, who later went on to be the president of Brown University. So Ted Sizer, who was a professor of education there, at the end of the talk, asked Warren Bennis, "Warren, do you like being a university president?" Now, just to give you the context, Warren Bennis, you know, very quick on his feet, you know, always has something to say, something very smart to say. But based on that question, he was completely stumped. He didn't know what to say. And it was all, you know, very uncomfortable silence in the room. And Warren Bennis thought about the question. And then he finally said, "Ted," remember, Ted Sizer asked him, "Do you like being a university president?" He said, "Ted, I like the idea of being a university president." The following day, he submitted his resignation and went back to being an academic. Wow. And this distinction between liking something and liking the idea of something is very important. And very often people make the choice. No one forces them. They make the choice of doing something that they like the idea of. Why? Because culture communicates to us that it's important, because other people think it's important. And you like the idea of, but in fact, you actually really like something else. And becoming, once again, aware, mindful of the real thing, the thing that makes a difference, that will make a positive difference in your life, and choosing that, that is easier said than done. First, it's not that easy becoming aware of it. And second, even if you are aware of it, choosing when it sometimes means going against the grain. But doing something that we really, really want to do with my life, with our lives, choosing that is a key element of happiness.
Yeah, and choosing is all about choosing again and again. And sometimes we stick to the idea we had several days or several months or several years ago, but we don't take the time to just make sure we're still connected and aligned with this idea, not just, you know, the aloof idea, but really the day-to-day realization of the idea.
Exactly, in practice.
In practice,
yeah. And you know, you point to something very important, which is sometimes things change. So, yeah. You know, maybe when I was 25, you know, being an athlete was the most important thing in my life. And, you know, when I was, 30, maybe it was something else. And when I'm 40, it's working. And when I'm 50, it's children. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But we need to, again, raise our levels of awareness. Now, how do we do that? One way to do it is by talking about it. Whether it's talking with a professional, a coach or a therapist, or whether it's talking with our partner or best friend. Another way is to write about it. You know, one of my favorite all-time books, which I really recommend, is by Karen Horney. Karen Horney was a student of Freud, and then she broke away from Freud and did a lot of important work in psychoanalysis. And she has a book called Self-Analysis. Mm. Self-analysis, and in it, she explores the idea of self-analysis and argues that we can explore ourselves through writing. And today we have a lot of research in psychology by Jamie Pennebaker and Laura King and others on the value of journaling. So journaling can help us make better choices.
Yeah, and can help us as well to find what is, let's say, our happiness boosters, what you call happiness boosters, because we need time and space to understand what we like and to make sure that what we liked a few years ago is still what we like today.
Yes, and again, you point to a very important element here, time. We need time. There is research by Daniel Gilbert and others arguing that essentially we have two minds, the automatic mind and the deliberative thinking mind. The automatic or reactive mind is triggered, as its name suggests, automatically when we don't have time. Whereas the deliberative mind needs time. And very often, especially in today's world when, you know, we're so crazy busy and there are so many things happening, we're always, you know, rushing and we're always distracted and we react and we do things on autopilot. And very often these are things that are not really the things that we want to be doing. And if we take time aside to write, or if we take time aside to talk about it, or time aside just to be, very often we our second mind, the deliberative mind, goes into action, and that's when we are likely to make the better decisions. Not always, but usually.
Yeah, and I like the point you made earlier on the fact that you recommend we choose to give ourselves permissions to be human. And I really like the point you've made in all your books about moving from perfection to authenticity. And I'm a recovering perfectionist myself, so I really appreciate all your books on the topic. And I really enjoyed this anecdote you shared about the fact that your first year of teaching on positive psychology reunited 8 students, 2 of them dropped off, and one of them shared the idea that he would look after you just to make sure you don't have down moments. And it really meant a lot to me that you share this anecdote, because it feels like the more we want to be a radiant exemplar as a perfectionist, the more we can go through the risk of having a kind of poker face and doing our best to appear the best version of what we think people would expect from us. And especially as a world famous speaker on positive psychology, this student expected from you that you experience 100% positive moments in your life. So first, thank you for sharing this anecdote. And how important has this experience been for you in your own life?
Yeah, you know, very often I would start a lecture by saying the following. I would say, the most important choice that you can make in order to find happiness is to first allowing in unhappiness. First choice is to allow in unhappiness. I see that as the foundation of the good life, because so many people truly believe that a happy life means being happy all the time. That maybe now I'm not, but in the future I will be. And certainly a person who's an expert in the science of happiness should be happiness 100%. It should be happy 100% of the time. Well, what I remind my students and myself and my children and my clients is the following, that there are only two kinds of people who do not experience painful emotions. Painful emotions such as sadness or anger or envy or anxiety or frustration. Two kinds of people who do not experience these emotions. The first kind are the psychopaths. The second kind of people who do not experience painful emotions are dead. So if we experience painful emotions, it's actually a good sign. It means we're not psychopaths and we're alive. The problem in today's world is that so many people reject painful emotions. And what happens when we reject painful emotions? They only grow stronger. They intensify. Which is why the first step in allowing in happiness is accepting, embracing unhappiness.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier the fact that you were a professional a squash player and you experienced an injury which led to stopping playing squash at a professional level. So it was in your early 20s. I feel it was heartbreaking for you at the time. But now, what would you say was the gift for you in this experience?
Yeah, you know, again, I think that I know that so many lessons that I learned and apply today in my life came as a result of being an athlete. 'Cause I think in sports, probably more than any other area, we have the opportunity to fail many times, probably more than any other area. 'Cause I don't know, even the greatest athletes, and you know, I was very far from being the a great athlete, but even the greatest athletes, they fail many times, they lose many times. You know, I lost tons of times, and you realize that that is how you improve. It's by playing players who are better than you. It's by making mistakes that you learn. And that's an important lesson for life. Again, a mantra that I repeat over and over again is learn to fail or fail to learn. Learn to fail or fail to learn. There is no other way, whether it's as an athlete, whether it's as a partner and you learn from conflict and disagreement, whether as a parent, whether as a leader and a manager. Failure is key. And when you learn to embrace failure, just as you embrace unhappiness, that's when you're in the best position to learn and to grow. Additionally, sports teaches you to work hard. You know, you don't become a good swimmer or a tennis player or a good pianist, for that matter, without putting in the hours. And it very much applies to happiness. You know, we're not born happy. You know, we're not born having amazing relationships. We learn how to have amazing how to cultivate amazing relationships. We learn how to cultivate happiness in our lives. And it takes practice, it takes time. So that's another important lesson that we learn indirectly from sports.
Mm-hmm. And with your experience as a researcher, a professor, and a human being, what would you say is the most efficient way to choose and to make a right choice for oneself?
Yeah, so I would have to go to mindfulness, because you know, being aware is key, and it encapsulates many of the other elements. So for example, mindfulness, okay, raises levels of awareness. It also forces you to take time, because you can't say, okay, now I have 2 seconds, quickly I'm mindful and then I leave. No, you take time, you know, whether it's 3 minutes or 30 minutes, but you take the time aside, and it's during that time that the mind, the body, the heart, they do a lot of work, a lot of synthesizing work, and help us choose better. The other thing with making good choices is being open to making bad choices. Again, there are no shortcuts. Learn to fail or fail to learn. So, you know, just actually this week we had this conversation in a class I'm teaching about, and I was teaching undergraduates at Columbia, and many of them were talking about the idea of FOMO, fear of missing out. And specifically, you know, how do I know that I made the right choice? And I went back to my teacher in college and in as a graduate student, Ellen Langer. And what she always said, she said, we always make the best decision given the resources that we have. Meaning, I may make a choice now to, you know, to go with a certain employee rather a certain job rather than another, and a year from now I may regret not going with the other one. However, a year later I have more resources, I have more information that I didn't have a year prior. In other words, I made the best decision given the resources that I had. Now, when do we make the best decision? When we take time to make that decision. Because if I just go on autopilot, then yes, I'll make mistakes and mistakes that that could have been prevented. But once I take time, and you know, how much time? Well, reasonable amount of time. It's obviously different for every choice. But once I take some time and make the decision, at that point, I made the best decision given my resources. And that can really help later on with regret. So that's one thing. The other thing is, once I make that choice, it's also important what I do after. And I think the most stark example is with relationships. You know, many people are afraid of, especially today, going into relationships because things are different today from what they were in the past. So in the past, you know, for most people, you know, you were born and, you know, a few years later, your parents decided that you will get together when you're 20 with your neighbor and, you know, and that was it. Today, when we have love marriage and we have a choice, or many people have a choice in most places around the world. And they're saying, okay, well, if I go with her or him, but, you know, what if someone better comes along? And what if someone better comes along on certain parameters? So here is the thing about choosing. When you look at the best relationships are not one where the partners chose perfectly. There is no perfect partner. It simply doesn't exist. But it's rather where partners committed to the choice that they made. Yes. Committed in terms of being together, obviously, but also committed time and effort they invested in this relationship. And when you invest and when you commit and you invest and you put effort into the relationship, this is when the relationship is likely to flourish and thrive. This is when you're likely to make your choice the right choice. Again, not by virtue of just choosing and then letting go, by virtue of choosing and then committing and putting effort into it. Yeah. In other words, what's much more important in terms of long-term happiness within a relationship, and again, this applies to a job as well and other things in life, but what's most important is not finding the right person, but rather committing to the person you chose, to the relationship that you chose.
And we tend to consider a choice as a kind of finish line, where I think it's the starting point, and then it's just micro choices confirmed again and again, as long as it makes sense for us to confirm it.
Exactly right. And going back to the example of relationships, you know, our model for relationships usually comes from the movies. And what happens in the movies? You know, the whole movie, you know, the two wreck their head, you know, should we be together? Should we not? They fight, they have, and then eventually they commit, they choose one another. And of course, we're made to believe that they live happily ever after, because that's when the screen comes down.
Yes.
You know, love begins where movies end.
Yes, they do.
And as you point out, it's the choices that we make after, day in and day out. Do I choose to, to bring my partner a flower today? Do we choose to go on a date on a regular basis? Do we choose to work through differences and conflict? These are all choices. Do we choose to bring positive energy to our interactions? Do we choose to appreciate rather than take for granted the wonderful things in our imperfect but wonderful partner? These are all choices that ultimately add up and create the happily ever after, with the ups and downs, because hopefully neither of you are psychopaths or dead.
Sure, exactly. And how do you choose when it's time for you to make the next move in your life? Do you, what are the signs you're looking for? And what is your secret sauce to make an aligned choice in your life?
Yeah, the signs, and again, this is no secret, everyone experiences, the signs are emotions. You know, emotions in many ways can be looked at as our feedback mechanism. Our feedback on the choices that we make. Now, emotions are not always right because, for example, you know, I may have an offer to give a lecture and I'm very nervous and the emotions are telling me, don't get on stage. Well, they may not be the right emotions or they may not be the emotions that I need to go after. However, What is important is for me to address these emotions. So anxiety may be, for example, coming from the fact that this is really important to me. In which case, you know, this is part of who I am. This is part of my calling. And then the anxiety is not telling me, Tal, don't do it. But on the contrary, Tal, this is something you need to do.
Yes.
Because you want it so much. That's why you're nervous. On the other hand, anxiety may also tell me that, well, maybe I should take another path. Joy is a very good sign of, you know, something that perhaps we should do. And again, not always, because I may experience joy now just lying on the beach and doing nothing. And that may be good for a while, but not as a way of life. So emotions are the starting point. Important feedback, they're the starting point. Then we need to take the time to look at them more closely, analyze these emotions. But the starting point are the emotions. They are the feedback on the choices that we make or that we are about to make.
So I hear it's all about creating the conditions to make a choice more than focusing on what you choose. In a way, I hear that taking time, making time, taking time to know ourselves, what is important for me, journaling, meditating,
talking to people,
and choosing the people around us, choosing our role models to just get inspired to the road we could take for our next step. Maybe it's even more important than focusing on the option I want to take.
Yes, you know, from the outset, we need to accept the fact that some choices that we make in retrospect would be a mistake.
Yeah.
And that's okay. We can't control outcome. What we can do is control the process. And this is what we need to focus on. You know, I'm reminded as you talk about Solomon, King Solomon, who is in the Bible heralded as the wisest, as the smartest person alive. And one of the things that Solomon does is ask God for a wise heart. And I love that combination between wisdom that's often associated with the mind and a heart that's obviously associated with emotion. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what we need to look for when we make choices. We need to look for a wise heart. And for that, we need to think about our emotions, to take time to be with our feelings.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as an author and lecturer, how do you choose the next topic to work on and to share with your audience?
Yeah, so in many ways, I feel like it chooses me in that it becomes so clear that this is what I want to deal with. And, you know, Carl Rogers, the psychologist back in the 1950s said, what is most personal is most general. What is most personal is most general. And, you know, I write about the things that I'm exploring that are personal to me. So, you know, I wrote a book about happiness because I was unhappy. You know, I did my dissertation, my PhD on self-esteem because I felt like I had low self-esteem and wanted to increase it. I'm now writing a book on calm because I want more calm in my life. So these are the topics that in many ways I feel choose me.
So I hear that you're working on a new book. When will it be released?
I don't know yet. I have I write a lot, so there are multiple projects going on at the same time.
Right.
The first book that I'm working on now is actually on the field of happiness studies. So putting together a lot of what my colleagues and I have been exploring over the last, 30 years and 3,000 years, because I also talk about Aristotle and Confucius in the book. And it's bringing together not just what psychologists had to say about happiness, but also what philosophers and neuroscientists and poets and film directors all have to say about happiness. It's integrating the disciplines to shed light on this very important topic that so many of us are, the question that so many of us are asking is, how can I increase happiness levels in myself and in others?
I'm looking forward to reading this new book from you. Tal, thank you so much for your time and generosity today. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. And I'm really very grateful for amazing people like you to be who they are, do what they do, and share the way they share their knowledge and experience. So thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to hearing more wisdom and to hear more from your wise heart in the upcoming month and years. Thank you so much, Tao.
Thank you very much.
Un grand merci à Tal Benchar pour son temps, pour sa confiance immédiate, pour sa simplicité et pour sa générosité. Alors, que vous a inspiré cette conversation? Je vous invite à identifier l'idée, la phrase ou le mot que vous choisissez d'en retenir. Avec quoi de nouveau repartez-vous de cette conversation? Quel est le petit pas que vous pouvez planifier dans les prochaines heures, dans les prochains jours, pour mettre en œuvre concrètement dans votre quotidien ce qui vous a inspiré? Partagez-moi vos retours par mail, via mon site ou sur les réseaux sociaux. Je serai ravie de découvrir de quelle manière cette conversation a résonné en vous, pour vous, et je serai ravie d'échanger avec vous. Pour en savoir plus sur l'actualité de Tal Benchar, direction son site talbenchar.com, et je vous recommande vivement la lecture de tous les ouvrages de Tal Benchar, qui ont tous été traduits en français, à commencer par « Choisir sa vie sans une expérience pour saisir sa chance », un de mes livres de chevet et un incontournable quand le thème du choix nous intéresse, et également le savoureux « Conversation avec mon coiffeur pour aimer la vie », livre dans lequel Tal Benchar partage les formidables conversations qu'il a partagées avec son coiffeur, philosophe et inspirant, lors de ses rendez-vous pour rafraîchir sa coupe de cheveux. Bonne lecture! Si vous êtes une personne qui sait cocher les cases avec succès et qui sent que pourtant la vie, ça doit être un peu plus que ça, si vous êtes lassé de votre quotidien agité en surface et que vous aspirez à plus de sens et de densité dans votre vie, sachez que j'accompagne un petit nombre de personnes en coaching individuel à distance. Si vous êtes à un moment de vie où vous sentez qu'il est temps d'arrêter les contorsions et qu'il est temps de vous construire une vie sur mesure qui vous ressemble et qui vous réjouit davantage, contactez-moi via mon site oriannesavoureluca.com afin que nous puissions identifier dans quelle mesure nous aimerions travailler ensemble à votre service. Voilà, c'est tout pour aujourd'hui. Vous retrouverez cet épisode et les notes associées sur le site oriannesavoureluca.com. Si vous aimez ce que je vous propose, pensez à vous abonner à la newsletter d'Avez-vous choisi pour être alerté dès la publication d'un nouvel épisode et pour recevoir la graine de la semaine. Une graine sous la forme d'une question, d'une réflexion, d'une intention que je sème par mail chaque lundi et que vous allez pouvoir faire germer ou regarder germer au fil de la semaine. Pour soutenir ce projet de façon bienveillante et efficace et pour lui donner davantage de visibilité, votre voix compte énormément et elle peut compter de différentes façons. Vous pouvez faire connaître Avez-vous choisi à ces personnes qui comptent pour vous et que l'idée de tout choisir dans leur vie pourrait réjouir. Vous pouvez également partager votre enthousiasme par écrit en déposant une constellation sur Apple Podcasts, un avis sur votre application de podcast préférée, sur le site ou les réseaux sociaux. Enfin, si vous souhaitez me contacter pour postuler à l'éclairage, par exemple, ou me partager vos retours, vos questions, vos avancées, pour me suggérer de nouveaux invités, vous pouvez me contacter via mon site et je me ferai un plaisir de vous répondre. Je vous souhaite une merveilleuse semaine et je vous donne rendez-vous vendredi prochain pour un nouvel épisode. Et d'ici là, et si vous choisissiez tout ?